We'd like to thank Karen and Jake Abelevitz for sponsoring this morning's Locks and Learn Le'ilu Nishmas, Jake's beloved parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah Bas Avram, and Karen's brother, Yoshua ben Shimon Dov. The Neshama should have an Aliyah. Okay. We are on, even though it is the seventh Mishnah in Chapter 2, it's actually our last Mishnah in Chapter 2. So if you remember, we started Chapter 2 with Mishnah 8. We went to the end of the chapter and then started from the beginning. So this Mishnah 7 is actually our last chapter. So when we finish this, perhaps today, although don't get your hopes too up, we will be finished with the second chapter of Perkei Avos. So we finish chapter 1, chapter 2, and then we're going to start with chapter 3 at some point. We're either going to finish this today and then next week do a recap through the lens of the Abarbanel, something we haven't done yet. The Abarbanel is one of the commentaries who looks at the entire chapter, chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3. Each chapter gives a running theme. He basically says that behind everybody's statements is a disagreement about a bigger picture. Even though it's not clear as we read it that that was happening, the Abarbanel is going to make the argument that there's a bigger picture to be had running behind the whole chapter 2. So I think that would be a cool way of reviewing chapter 2 is to see it through a new light through the lens of the Abarbanel. So I think we're going to do that next week and finish up if we don't finish up this Mishnah today. So let's read this Mishnah. We alluded to it. We read through it last week in connection to the sixth Mishnah, but we're going to start again from scratch. So on the top of your source sheets, the less the merrier, the Mishnah says, Hu haya Omer, he used to say, who was he who used to say this? Anybody remember who was the statement of last Mishnah? Last Mishnah was also Ahu. So then you have to go back to the Mishnah before that. And who said that? Hillel. So we're still within the statements of Hillel. So Hillel says as follows. Hu haya Omer. And I outlined it in terms of the numbers for you. Number one. Marbe basar, marbe rima. The more flesh, the more worms. And we're going to see the commentaries, what they say about that. But it has to do something about eating a lot. Marbe and the bad consequences of that. Marbe nechasim, lots of property. Marbe da'aga, that increases the anxiety, the worry. Number three, marbe nashim, marbe kshafim. The more women, but accurately translated here by the Sensino, more wives. And so this is a time where polygamy was accepted, but Hillel's coming to say that there might be some negative consequences to that, which is clear within Tanakh as well. So marbe nashim, marbe kshafim, although not the witchcraft part, but there's some element of problematic actions that come about from having too many wives. Number four, marbe shpachos, marbe zima. If you have too many bond women, there will be more lewdness involved, so that wasn't good for your household either. And marba avadim, marba gezel. The more slaves you had, the more robbery. So here's the top five things that Hillel tells us if you have more of, it'll lead to bad things. And we're going to try to find some themes as to why these five were chosen. Is there any rhyme to this? Is there any reason why he chooses these five things versus other five things? There's more things. But here are five things, the more, the worse. And then the next six things, which is really five, as we'll see, but the next five things contrast where the more the better, more the merrier. So marbe Torah, marbe chayim. The more Torah we have, the more life we have. Marbe yeshiva, marbe chachma. The more sitting down, references here, at least the English here says to study and to contemplate. So the more sitting, the more wisdom. Marbe etza, marbe tuna, the more counsel either one takes or one gives, we'll see commentaries on that, the more understanding that will happen. Marbe tzedakah, marbe shalom, the more tzedakah, either we can translate as charity, here they translate it as righteousness, again we'll see the commentators, but the more of tzedakah that we do, the more peace that there is. And then finally, kana shem tov, kana la'atzmo, if we acquire a good name, that acquisition is for ourselves. And kanalo dibre Torah, kanalo chaylam olam haba. So if you have acquired for ourselves the words of Torah, we have acquired for ourselves the world to come. So we have five things that the more the worse, and we have five, four and a half, six, whatever you want to count it, that basically the message is the more you have it, the better. Okay, so now, we're going to basically see a few different ideas. I want to start with number 2 and 3. We'll skip number 1 for now, but we'll come back to it. Number 2 and 3 are both ideas in terms of the sequence. Why these 5 things and why in this order? Does anybody have any first thoughts? Let's go with not why these 5 things necessarily, but why the order of these 5 things. We start with food, then we go to property, wives, shvachos, and then avadim. So we're going to see 2 sources. One that says that it is a matter of how things go in terms of when you start the hedonic treadmill, as it's called in psychology, where you start to get all the good physical pleasures in life, and then what ends up happening? You need more, you need more, you need more, you need more. So you start with more food, and then it goes up. And then we'll see a different source that says that this is actually to be understood from a developmental perspective in terms of lifespan, that the pleasures of life begin with number 1, and then they gradually increase as they go on in age. So it's a timeline in age. So we'll see these 2 sources. Source number 2, Rav Avadya Bar Tanura, Marbe Nashim Marbe Kshafim, Sidra Naket Va'azil. So he says that there is a method to this. You could have made the argument that there's no method. He's just listing 5 things. But Bar Tanura says, no, there's a method to this. There's an order to the 5 things. B'tchila Adam Mekashit Atzmo Va'ochel V'shose Umar V'basar. So we start with food. Start eating. Start gradually increasing our flesh. V'achar kach mevakesh laharbos nechasim. And then the next thing after you've mastered the foodies, you go to, I need now more property. Ula'acha shahir b'nechasim, that's not enough now. Property's not enough. Possessions are not enough. V'roosh yesh b'yadot sipok l'parnes nashim rabos humar v'lo nashim. Ah, now I can afford the women. Right? So I'm going to marry lots and lots of women because I can afford it now. You know, obviously, this is speaking from a man's perspective. Ula'achar shahar b'nashim kol'achat sricha shifas. Now that's not enough. Now you have the wives, but the wives all need their own servants. So you have to hire the shifchos, the shvachos, so that they can serve the wives. Now you have to take care of them, so that's going to cost even more money. So now you have lots of wives, you have lots of shvachos, you have presumably lots of kids, so it's a huge, gigantic household. You know, what do you need now? So you're going to need more food, you're going to have to plant your vineyards, you're going to have to plant your food, your wheat, etc. So now you're going to need servants in order to plant these fields and vineyards. That's why they're in this order. So the point that the Bar Tanura is making, and you could put this in contemporary terms however you want to, but the idea is that you start at one point, and then it never is enough, and then you have to keep going, and you have to get more, and then you need more and more and more and more, and before you know it, you have all of these things, and these things have their problems and side effects and consequences that are negative when it goes along with the reboy of them. Good? Now, notice how the word is marbe. What do you learn from the word marbe?
When it's not okay if it's a measurement.
Good. So marbe means it's too much. So what's the problem? The problem is when they're too much. When is it not a problem? If done in moderation. Right? So this is not saying that it's bad to have all these things. It's not bad to have food. It's not bad to have possessions. It's bad to have too much of these things. Okay, so that's an important insight, and we'll see some who make it explicitly. Now, look at source number 3, Tiferes Yisrael. Says, Hu haya omer, chamisha mine tavos, yesh shiyakitsu ba'adam mine'urav keseder ze'achar ze. So there's 5 different types of ta'avot, of desires, that begin by birth, or begin by early childhood, and then increase over time as the child develops into an adult. So what's the first one? So the only desire that the person has is eating and drinking, right? You can see some, you know, Freudian ideas here that you know we're talking about how the desire starts with achila v'shtia, the achar kach gam lemamon. Then all of a sudden, you know, I need money to buy candy, and I need money to make trades with my friends on the bus so that, you know, I could trade food and stuff like that. So now, then money becomes important. V'achar kach, then as they grow a little bit older, yisorbo gam push hamishush b'mishkal v'kadoma, so then the sexual desires begin, adolescence time, pre-adolescence a little bit, v'achar kach ba ba'anashim v'yirtza shi'yichabduhu, and then it's not just about gratification from a physical level, but now I also need status. I want people to respect me. I want people to honor me. And the way I do that is by having more servants. That's a status symbol. So now I've gone through my life. I've gone through all of these desires and pleasures. And now I need people to help me out. And for all these things, if these are what you're going for, if this is what's your desire and your plan and all of your goals, then what will end up happening? You will get the opposite. So everything you think is good for you, you might get that, but it's not going to be as pleasurable as you expect. So it's basically a paradigm for all of our desires that we think that if we run after them and we try to get them, that it's going to be good for us, but in the end, it will be bad. They will have their negative consequences. Okay, so now, look at source number, let's do four, and then we'll go back to one. So this four note here says, it's a little bit easier to read than number one. Not that it's easy to read, but it's easier than number one. So this forno says, Hinei adavar asher hu ba'atzmo shleimut, kol ma sheyir be'yeh yoser tov. So when it comes to things that will bring us perfection, shleimut, and we'll see this in future sources in a moment, but when it comes to things that bring us perfection, then the more, the better. Amnam ma she'enan ba'atzmo shleimut. Things that are not in themselves perfection. Af al pi shiyek kli hechrachi le'eza shleimos yeh haribuy mimenu mutter u mazik. It's very fascinating how he phrases this. He says, these aren't things that are inherently bad. If anything, what are these first five things? They are tools in order for us to attain perfection. When it comes to things that are perfection, which are going to be the last five things in the Mishnah, then the more the merrier. Go for it. Do it as much as possible. When it comes to the first five things, it's not that they're inherently negative. If anything, they're actually positive because they are supposed to be used as tools to get us to the second list of five things. Right? Food is going to help us be able to have the energy to sit and learn and to do mitzvos. And all these things are tools to help us attain the shleimus, the perfection. But it is in those things that we need, they're essential, is where the battle is to make sure that you are not marvin. You don't go too far. Those are the things you have to be very careful about. And we can add that these are the five things, since they're needed, so God implants in us the desire. So why does he implant with us this desire for food and for money and for sex and for kavod? Why are all those things implanted within us? That's a big question. Why does he give it? What's the reason? Because we need them to achieve shleimus. And so it's not that they're inherently, what I'm emphasizing here is that these are not inherently negative things. They're there in order for us to achieve shleimus. But because God implanted them within us with such a desire, you could easily misuse them and go too far. So therefore Hillel is coming and saying, make sure that you are not marbe. Think about the consequences. Think about what happens if you do too much of these things. Yeah?
When does it become marbe?
So that there's obviously a line somewhere. I think in general, when it comes to these statements in Pirkei Avos and Chazal as a whole, often not specific lines. Like they don't tell you this is when you have no. This is when you know that it's too far. It's up to us to be able to find that balance. Right? You will know it when you see it. But the problem is that sometimes you don't. right? And sometimes you need sometimes you need to read this Mishnah over and over and over again to keep in mind and ask myself, am I missing this? Or is this, you know, at what point did I go too far?
I think you go back to the previous Mishnah, you know, earlier on, where you had to have a neighbor to tell you what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong.
Right. Good. So you have to, the whole system of Torah, the whole system of Pirkei Avos, all of that is to this effect, to find this moderation. And it gets to, again, I think pointing out the previous Mishnah house is a perfect concept here, because these are things that we've seen before in terms of, you know, Kedoshim Tiyu, to be holy. What does it mean to be holy? So it means to things that are allowed for you to do, don't go too far. So things that are mutter for you, make sure you do them in moderation. It's the same idea. So you have to, but there's no specific, as the Ramban says, on Kedoshim Tiyu, as well as Vasisa Yashur Vatov, to do what's right and what's good, which we spent an entire shir on as well. The Ramban says explicitly that we don't give you specific guidelines. There aren't specific turning points where you say that now, because that's, it takes your application in your life, in your time period, and depending on your circumstances and situation, to be able to find that idea. And I find that empowering but scary. Right? It's almost easier to say, give me the halacha, give me the psak, give me the rule, but it's not so simple. These are things that we all have to struggle with on an individual basis. One more and then we'll keep going. Yeah. What? So I think that you can answer that the intelligence is there, it's just a struggle, and it's hard, and that's why we have Torah to guide us, right? So if it was easy, there would be no purpose for all this.
Right?
Then nobody would be here for the locks and learn, because everybody would know it already. Okay, so that's the Sforno. Now, let's look at the first list. I know it looks a little daunting, but I think we'll be okay. So this is the Lev Avos, around the same time period as the Sforno. Let's go. He just adds, an interesting psychological insight here. Go to third line from the top in the middle. And I know it's hard to read. Third line from the top in the middle, the word says Lefi. Like almost smack in the middle of the third line. It says, Lefi shebizeh, and I'll translate it if you can't read it, or Lefi shebizeh ha-ma'amar bechlalo kulam v'hine efshar ki Lefi sheba'avur shegamar omer, and tell me if I misread any of this, we'll get the main point. Ki ha-shalim lo limar'et inav u'shefot ki ha-adam yir'el einayim ha-chadha Tivunayata kemo kain valomar kihine mishimar bebasar bechosh vo shato hizar gadol vayoter karov eladam bolamazeh huatov hativi. What he's saying is, and even though we didn't get every single word in there, what his main point is that these list of five things are things that psychologically we think are good for us. Because the draw to them, and because God made these so essential, if you want to combine it with the Sforno, because God made this so essential for us to live, they seem that these are things that are great. The more the better. If God wants me to, it sounds like the desire's there, the more the better. It's that distortion, it's that thought process that if they're good, then maybe I should just have more and more and more and more. There's something within us that makes us think that the more, the better. And that's why he says specifically, we have to go. It's the Shehu Brius HaGuf VeChosko. So I can make. He basically then goes and makes an argument for each one of these on why the better, the more the better, right? It's Brius HaGuf VeChosko. Adraba Yigram LaAtzmo HaHefech. So you're going to think, oh, I'm eating very, you know, I'm eating a lot of good stuff here. I'm keeping myself strong. My body's strong. No, it's Adraba. That's the key word here. It's the opposite. Yigram LaAtzmo HaHefech. You're going to end up having the opposite. Ki gorem lo ha'ipush. Now, I'm actually thinking about this interestingly from a historical perspective, so I don't know how much this is true, but everybody says that back in the 19th century, 18th century, and I assume that it goes farther back. So what was the status symbol? What was the status symbol? Whether you were, it was fat was the status symbol. Right, so being overweight showed that I had money, and that I was, so it almost sounds, because now we don't really understand it, because to us our gut reaction is marba basar. We know, like, you know, you're supposed to stay skinny and healthy, right? But it's almost like he's saying is that people would think that it's good to be marba basar, why is it good to be marba basar? So if you go with that thought process that, you know, a few hundred years ago, that was good. That's brius. Me being overweight and is good for me. And now he's saying, like, no, that's not true. That's going to add to the how much extra denigration you will have after. So the interesting question, when it says marba rima, so the more worms, so what does that mean? So there's two ways to understand it. So the simple way is perhaps to say when you die, there'll be more worms eating your flesh, right? But the other way to understand it is to say, and we'll see this, that even when you're alive, right, all of those problems that you're going to have through being overweight is going to be problems. You know, the rima isn't necessarily mean worms literally, but it means some sort of denigration of body, or probably a better word, of your body. All right, so we're not going to read the whole thing, but his main point is, you go try to go through it on your own if you want, but he takes each one and says why you would think that I can make the argument that more is better with these things. And the Mishnah is coming to tell me that no, more is actually worse. Don't trust that first reaction or judgment, that desire that you have, like, oh, I need more of this, I need more of this. No, stop. Think about the consequences. Think about the long term. It's not going to be good for you in the end. Yeah?
I see a parallel of medication, you know, where you take, you have medicine, and you take a pill, and you think, well, this is a really good job as being a pharmacist.
Right.
But this is doing a really good job. Maybe if I take two or three of them instead, it'll do even a better job, and then
right.
You overdose.
Right, that's a good parallel. Right, that's things that work. They work in moderation. It's a specific amount. With medicine, it's a little bit easier because then you know what that amount is.
Yeah, but
to some extent, right?
But the layman doesn't always.
Right, the more the better, and that's the point. No, it's not. The more the actual worse it is. Okay. So go to flip the page. Go to source number 5. We'll spend a little bit of time talking about Marba Basar, and then we'll spend a little bit of time on each one, just to get a little bit of insight into what the message is on each level. So the Pirkei Moshe here says as follows, and I want you to begin. I put the two sentences in the beginning, even though it's not essential to this teaching, but it's sort of like a klal, general perspective idea on how to understand Pirkei Avos in general. His methodology is to follow this paradigm, as we'll see in a second. So the Pirkei Moshe says, "V'hishlim zeh hashalem pnini amarav, v'omro marbe basar marbe rima, asher bahem natan seder kolel achar hizaros haruyos." So he says that what this last statement, which the shalem, right, meaning Hillel, the perfect person, the person we idolize, says, is supposed to be a general principle after specific warnings that he gave. So it's the purpose of to come to perfection and to stay away from problems. So what the point here that he's saying is that this Mishnah is coming to teach us how we're supposed to deal with ourselves, hanagat adam et atzmo, ve'et beito, as well as his family, ve'et medinato, general society, derech klalut, with general principles. Maspik li'isha shalem, asagat ha'tov acharon, u'kenegre hanagat adam et atzmo, and he's about to explain, we'll take in a second, I just want to pause and say that this is his general methodology. When you look in Pirkei Avos, it's something we can do also. When we see the statements in Pirkei Avos, let's try to understand, are there different levels of messages within the Mishnah? And he says your general go-to, and we've seen this before in other contexts, your general go-to is to start asking, okay, who's this message for? This is a personal message. Who's this message for? This message is for how I should deal with my household. Who's this message for? This message is for me how to deal with general society. And then you can keep asking, okay, so this message is for Dayanim, and this message is for this type of category, and this type of category. But what he wants to do is to show that there's a message for Shleimut, for perfection, in all these different contexts and all these different types of relationships. So the Marbe Basar is for my own personal self-development. My own Shleimut is, that's what the first statement here in the Mishnah is saying. So third line here in Source 5, U'kineged hanagat ha'adam et atzmo amar sha'ish asher megamato hu laharbot basar. So somebody whose go-to is to put on weight. Ulehimashech achar hata'anugim. So that doesn't mean, and I saw this somewhere, I don't remember where. The critique here isn't of being overweight. Let's be clear, right? The critique here is eating too much for pleasure. So oftentimes that is parallel and correlated with being overweight, but it's not necessarily. You could be overweight and not because of this problem. You could be overweight for other problems, for genetic issues, whatever. So it's not a critique of just being overweight. It's a critique of marbe basar, meaning the more meat I eat, the more ta'anugim, the more pleasures and desires that I want to fulfill, that's what the problem is. So it's lihimashech achar ha-ta'anugim v'hu nimshach achar tov ha-chomer. It means that I'm very physical. I'm somebody who wants to have the physical pleasures fulfilled. V'tov ha-nefesh yashlich achar gavo, and I don't really care about my soul as much. Hinei ish kezeh, this type of person, mashaya mevakesh hu mafsid. The thing you want, which is the physical pleasures, it's you're not going to get it. Ki hu mevakesh kiyum ha-guf bezeh, you want the physical pleasures for my physical body, but you're directly causing a problem to the body. You're causing the hefset of the body. Because now you're going to end up having these, you know, worms. Ki riboy, and this is how he explains it. Ki riboy hama'achalim mafsidim es haguf umachlim aso me'akoach kenodas. We understand it from a live perspective, not from a dead perspective. It says that it's understood that the more I eat, the more sugar I have, the more what I insert, whatever thing is bad for you in terms of food, that it's going to end up damaging your body. So he's saying there's an inherent contradiction in your thought process. I want pleasure for my body perspective, and I don't really care about my soul, but what do you end up doing? Damaging your body. Right? So you're hurting the thing that you're trying to help. Or to give pleasure to. Right. I mean, that's the answer. The answer is that I'm not thinking about that long term. I'm thinking about my pleasure right now. The more I eat, the worse power my body has. He said, "Rima, the worm is just a symbol for any type of loss, any type of damage that's done." So he says the same thing. I want property because property and things and possessions make me happy. Right? It's the exact opposite. Right? There's a direct parallel here. He's not saying there's a long-term side effect that comes that's, you know, out from left field. What you are doing that you think is causing you pleasure and happiness is itself undermining what your goal is. Because the more I have, it's make me happy. What ends up happening? Hinehu lahepa. That's the opposite. Shemar bedaga behefseidam. Because I'm just going to get worried that they're going to get lost. Vatoreach al asifasam. And not just am I going to get worried they're going to get lost, I also have to spend a lot of time and money and energy and effort in order to acquire them. Shehem beemet kema amar hamalitz malei kaf nachat chalush ma'od. So, bring some other proverbs that bring to this point. But it's through my pleasure that I want, through possessions, it doesn't lead to happiness, it leads to stress and worry and anxiety. So it's that thing that I want is itself undermining and not doing what my goal is. And just something that Barry pointed out last week, so let's just tie it into the previous Mishnah. What was the previous Mishnah about? What did Hillel see? He saw the skull floating on the water, right? And what was the message of the skull floating on the water? Mida keneged mida. That what you did, you killed somebody, so you deserve to be killed, right? So there, we spent the whole time discussing how do we understand this. It doesn't conform with reality. In reality, it's much harder to see this because the bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people. So how is it? This doesn't fit with my world view. And then one of the principles we saw was that this Mishnah was a follow-up to that. Because what is this Mishnah trying to teach? That this is an inherent consequence that we see. This isn't magic. This isn't something that's out there or supernatural. This is a natural consequence to what we do. So then, take from this Mishnah and then put it back on last mission and say that everything's a natural consequence, we just don't see it. Here we see it. When it comes to God's reward and punishment, we don't see it. But the message is parallel, the message is the same. But for us today, the point is that these are all natural consequences if you just take a long-term view and not a short-term pleasure perspective. Okay, so now, let's see source number 6. There's another interesting caveat here. So does this mean, let's go with the money one for a second, does this mean that everybody who has money is that automatically bad? Right? Is this just like, you know, if anybody's overweight, is it automatically bad? No, because it's not a critique of overweight. It's a critique of seeking pleasure. So now, if I have lots of money, is that automatic? Is Hillel saying it's an automatic, I'm going to be worried and have, you know, anxiety about that? So the answer is perhaps no. The Medrash Shmuel says no. Look at source number 6. Now I want you to read this carefully because I think we can ask a question on the way he presents this. So he says, "V'amar marba nefasim marba daga perish ki atana lo diber im shleimei hadas." The Mishnah's not talking about smart people. It's not talking about shleimei hadas. How would you translate that? Perfected intellects, if you will. It's not talking about, you know, your good solid type of person. Who is it talking to? Kain roy lim noa raglenu miler dofakar hevel mi daigo papa shemi yaavim imenu kashlemim afim yitzbru kaafar kesef aya ola aladaski who nimna shiikra bo shum chiseron enim choshma soloklum. So if you have the perspective that, you know, I'm going to try to make money, but if I lose it, okay, I'll survive. That's what's the worst case scenario. It's just money. So if you have that perspective, then it's not a problem. So he's only talking about people who are trying to amass money because they're weak in mind. Right? What does that mean? So for people who think they don't have money, but they want money because that's going to solve all my problems. That's the person the mission is talking to. Money's not going to solve your problem. But it's not an inherent problem with making money. You can make money as long as you don't think that it's going to solve all your problems. Because then you can survive. With, you know, you don't have to be, it's not an automatic anxiety because you have money. So it's a shleimei hadas issue. Now, so what's the problem with this interpretation? Is there a problem with this interpretation? So it's not really what the Mishnah says, maybe, but what else? Okay, so that's a question on the Mishnah in general. Right, so that's not a question on this perspective. That's a question in general. You're saying that the more I have, the more anxiety I have, but the less I have, the more anxiety I have also. So that's fair. And what he would say is that's my point. He would say my point is that the Mishnah is not critiquing money. The Mishnah is critiquing not having the proper perspective on money, which goes either from having too much or too little. So if I have too little, presumably, he would say, for that you shouldn't be anxious either. You should have, you know, be talking in Hashem, and etc. Not that that's an easy thing to do. But, fair point. But there's another problem, perhaps, with this Mishnah, with this explanation. Yeah?
That's preoccupied with amassing wealth or money in itself. That's the problem what he's trying to say.
Right, yeah. But there's a methodological issue here. Judy, yeah? So he's putting the trust in the person, which is what Hillel's trying to say, is don't trust the person. But yeah, I hear that. Anything else?
The issue of the person is when that's something that people come, it's not based on our efforts. So the person's anxiety is because he assumes that the slightest touch is ever determined by a chef.
Right, and that's kind of what Susan says. So it really goes, it's not a matter of having too much or too little, it's having a matter of perspective. And that's the message. But I think the problem, perhaps, about this is it gets back to last chance.
Last chance. Yeah. Barbeta, I think Barbeta, that doesn't go to the actual, what the person is looking to do in order to acquire it. It's once you have the nechassim, your anxiety really.
Right. So you're saying that it is a direct connection.
Yes.
Right. Direct connection is money will equal anxiety. You could read it that way. Major Small is not reading it that way. You could read it that way. I hear that. Yeah. It could be right. It could be property, but they're inherently connected with each other.
Yeah.
Right, but you could. You're right. It means property, but I think the message comes with money as well, because it's, you know, I'm trying to get more money and I'm afraid I'm going to lose it. It's a similar idea. Okay, really, last chance. Yeah.
I like to look at text a lot. So if you would have said riboy, okay, or harve, okay. A verb form, marve, means request to have more. Do you get it? Because you barely do something, or you win the lottery, you got that. You have it.
Okay, so that's a good reading, yeah. That supports the Medrash Shmuel, right? You're saying that's again, Sir Sarit's saying that it's a direct consequence. I have money that creates anxiety. You're saying it's not the having money, it's the quest for anxiety. The quest for money creates the anxiety, and if you don't have the right perspective, that's what the problem is. I would just say,
you have a rich dad give it to you, or you want the body, whatever they did.
Right. Then it doesn't automate. It can still create, you can still be afraid that you're going to lose it, but yeah, I... Really, really last one, and then we're going to keep moving. Yeah.
I think that a lot of us try to invest money because we're thinking of when we retire, we shouldn't be a burden on our children. Mm-hmm. We should be able to afford what we need to generate.
Yeah, so again, there's nothing wrong inherently with that concept, but if you have the wrong perspective as you do that, then it will create anxiety. Right? So the actual amassment of money, again, is not the issue, according to the Medrash Shmuel, because there could be good reasons to amass money, to have retirement funds and to not be a burden on other people. That could be a good reason, but it would require still the perspective that if I don't have it, okay, I have bitachon in Hashem. Right? We're going to be okay. If I lose it, I have bitachon in Hashem. The one point that I was trying to get to, which might not be the strongest point, is that until this point, anytime we see a mission in Perkei Avos, what's our perspective? Our perspective is who's our audience? Who are we talking to? Presumably, we're talking to people who are shleimei hadas, who are in the base medrash, who are following God's rules to an extent. And we've seen it explicitly in the past that the Mishnah in Perkei Avos is not meant to teach. Actually, I think we said it last week, right? Last week we asked on Hillel's comment, why is Hillel saying to this mobster who's dead, the fact that you were killed somebody is the reason why you're killed. Perkei Avos isn't talking to killers, right? It's talking to people who are trying to aspire. So my only critique, perhaps, is that why would Hillel be talking to what he determines as non-shleimei hadas, right? Chisaron hadas, people who are not thinking. It's sort of like a derogatory term, if you will. And I would think that that's not the way that Perkei Avos generally works. It's not the strongest question in the world, but I think that might be... To say that it's a direct... What Sarit's saying, it's a direct correlation. More money, more problems, right? That's for everybody. That's not just for people who are non-shleimei hadas. Okay, either way.
Maybe shleimei hadas, because they're shleimei hadas and sitting in the base medrash, they don't have a lot of knowledge to do this as well. They suddenly come into a lot of money. They don't know what to do if you can corrupt them very easily.
Okay, so he's training them for their careers. Okay, that could be. That could be. But it could be that I'm wrong. It could be that Hillel was saying this specifically for people who weren't in the base medrash and weren't shleimei hadas. Okay, either way. Now, a few more ideas outside, and then we'll finish up with a few ideas inside. So, in terms of, I think we covered Marba Basar, Marba Rima decently. Marba Nechasa, Marba Daiga, we covered as well. Right? We're afraid. What's the Daiga? What are we afraid? Where does the anxiety come from? So we just saw two explanations in the Perkei Moshe. It's either that I'm worried it's going to get lost, or that I'm so worried in terms of acquiring it, and there's so much toreach, there's so much effort that's required. Some other ideas, again, you don't have this inside. There are some people who say that I'm afraid that I'm going to to lose it. I'm afraid it's going to be stolen. I'm afraid it's going to have to pay too many taxes. All of these issues, you know, just surveying some of them. Now, in terms of Marbe Nashim, so I would just say, overall, again, it's not talking about women in general, it's talking about having too many wives. So what's the kshafim? Why is it that you have more witchcraft, whatever that means? So the answer that most of the Mefarshim go with here is that the idea is basically, either it's symbolic or it means it literally, but it creates jealousy. Right? If you have too many wives, there's going to be too much jealousy. So if there's too much jealousy, what do people do when they're jealous? They make voodoo dolls of the, you know, the other wife, and they start poking it, right? So no, but I'm saying, but that's the concept is that it uses kshafim, because maybe he was saying it literally, that's what the co-wives did to each other. You know, they tried to pull some witchcraft on each other, or it could just be symbolic of the fact that it creates the jealousy, and the jealousy creates bad behavior, and that's going to be, you think you're great, you have so many wives, but guess what, you're going to have to deal with a lot of headaches when they fight for your power, and again, there's for your attention, and that's inherent in Tanakh, and any avos, you know, Avram and Sarah and Hagar, and then you have with Yaakov in the fourth, it's inherent in that position of having too many wives, that there's going to be competition between them. So that's the idea, is that if you spread them out, you know, say. Okay, that's there's going to be fighting, there's going to be a problem. Now, what about the having too many shpachot? So if you have too many maidservants, so, you know, you don't know who you're hiring, you don't know what their level of, how kosher they are, in a sense, you know, how they're going to behave, so there's going to be some problems. I mean, you know, just have to, any of those, what was the, these like old TV shows with, you know, maids, there's always some politics involved with.
Especially if you have male and female.
Right, if you have male and female together. It was understood back in the times of Chazal that having servants and maidservants together, you know, there was going to be some level of foul play there. So, you know, you think you're doing great, you're going to have more help, but you're going to have to deal with, you know, all
downtown
these.
Abbey,
right, downtown. Yeah. Okay. Right, so now, and then in terms of the Avadim, Marba Gezel, it's a similar concept that we're just afraid of the character of the people that you're hiring. So you think you're hiring them, they're going to help you out, but then all of a sudden your candlesticks are going to be missing, and then you're going to have to deal with all these problems. Basically, it's a headache. You have more things, it's more people to manage, it's more people to be responsible for. At the end of the day, it's going to be a headache. So that's the Marba part. You think these things are good, maybe in limitations they're good, but in full, they're problematic. I wanna do the second part before we run out of time. So those are the bad things. What about the good things? So there's some commentators, and we're not going to do this, I'm just going to mention it in passing. There's some commentators who try to match each of the second five of the things that are good to be Marba with the first five that are bad to be Marba, so to try to make a direct correlation. Others say that that's just a waste of time.
And the second five is spiritual.
I'll show you the Maharal. I'm not sure we're going to have time to do it. The Maharal does something along those lines. But some say that this is direct counteraction to those things. Okay, you can spend your time trying to figure it out. There are some commentators that do it. Others say it's a waste of time. You're not going to get a direct correlation. So you have Marba Torah, Marba Chaim. So it's pretty straightforward. The more Torah you have, the more life you have. But I want to look at source number 7. Source number 7 is Rabbeinu Yom. I think it's a fascinating insight. So he says, Marba Torah, Marba Chaim. Zeh Adavar Keneged Masha Amar Marba Basar Marba Rima. So he says that he is one of these commentators who tries to make a direct correlation. This is counteracting having more basar equals more worms. Shal Yidei Atayno Gizkatsu Yamav. Through pleasure, you're going to have less life. La Yidei Amo B'Torah Yarifam. But through working hard in Torah, you're going to have a longer life. V'gam kein hu keneged marba nechasim, marba daiga, ki daiga se nechasim mekatzer shnosa, having anxiety about nechasim is going to decrease your years. But now, v'dagas ha-Torah, worrying about Torah. Now, before we read this, think about it. What he's setting up is a problem. If anxiety is bad for me and shortens my life, so my daiga of my nechasim make me, he's arguing, live less, and I think there's studies on this, right? Stress, anxiety decreases your lifespan. So if I am daga of Torah, so I'm worried about my learning Torah. I have anxiety about that I have to learn more. So what does that do to me?
Great.
Right? So it was just fascinating that he even thought of this question. So he says, Kashrich Vidagas Torah Akihi Daga Gedola Lemaven. There should be a pacha, there should be a worry, a fear when it comes to your learning of Torah. Right? Yira Shemayim. We all stay away from it. Oh, fear is bad, anxiety is bad. You know, Yira Shemayim is bad. To make sure that I say something properly and that I learn it properly. You cannot be caused any harm through that anxiety, through that worry. What? Afa pisha, because of this Mishnah. Afa pisha, or from the pasuk, it's chaimiv. Afa pisha amru chachmei ateva hayagon choli alev. Even though he's quoting now the doctors, the scientists. Even though the scientists say that worry is bad for your heart, this is 12th century. Vahadagahu kalos halev, and worrying, anxiety is going to destroy, weaken your heart. Ah. Doeg b'Torah orach yamim v'shnos chayim v'shalom yosifulo. If you worry about Torah, it's going to increase your lifespan. V'alzeh amar Shlomo yiras Hashem tosif yamim v'shnos v'shalom tikserenu. So how does he deal with this from a natural psychological realm? Does he even want to deal with this from a natural psychological realm? Or is he saying this is just a supernatural guarantee that even though you have daiga, and usually that worry creates shortening of life, God's going to give you longer life, or you could understand it from a psychological perspective, right? The worry is fundamentally different when it comes to nechassim than when it comes to Torah. When it comes to Torah, the worry isn't, or shouldn't be, one that you're afraid of whatever negative consequences come along with marvin nechassim. It's fundamentally, I have to play it out a little bit, think about it. Not that you don't see anxiety, and the psychologist in the room will probably agree with this. Not that you don't see unhealthy anxiety in relation to Torah learning, because you do, but in theory, he's arguing, you shouldn't, right?
And he's basically saying, it's my anxiety is okay, but like, you know, it's really saying, because I'm so much Torah, if I get anxious about that, I just find that I don't really want to think of it. But it's really making Torah into all of this other stuff.
Right, so I would say that he's not. I would say that, however we can think about it, maybe we have to think about it a little bit more. But I would say that it's one of two ways of reading this. I would assume he's going to read it the second way. But the first way of reading it is that, yes, you'll have unhealthy anxiety, but you're still going to live long. Right? That's one way. And God's going to guarantee you that. That's one way of reading it. The other way of reading it is that in theory, if you do it right, and I believe this is true, that you could have healthy anxiety, right? You could be, it could act as a motivation and right? So this, if done right, concern for Torah will lead you to actually longer life.
It's like all the other anxieties, to a point.
It could, right.
To a point.
Then it's not essentially, then it wouldn't be essentially.
We haven't dealt with anybody who has to, say 3 times because they made one mistake.
Right. So I would say this is out of the realm of mental illness. Right. So when you get into the mental illness realm, then anything can go, and you have to.
He wasn't thinking of
solution. I hear that. Okay. So that, I just think again, whether or not we have a clear understanding of how he does this, it's something to analyze a little bit. I think it's a fascinating idea. So now, so flip the page back. We'll just read through the rest. I don't have too many more insights here. So marba yeshiva, marba chachma. So if you have more sitting, you have more wisdom. So what does it mean, sitting? So sitting can either mean like you're sitting in the base medrash, so you're learning. Sitting can mean that you're teaching, so you're going to learn from your students. It's not hard to understand where he's going with that. Marba etza, marba tunis. The more advice either that I give, the more wisdom I get. So people ask me for advice, so I have to think about things. I have to try to relate it to the person, and that itself creates my own increase in wisdom. Or it could mean the more I ask advice, the more wisdom I get. So I shouldn't think that I know everything. I should ask for help if I need it. Now, marbet tzedakah, marbet shalom is also interesting. So if you understand it as a charity, so the more charity I give, the more peace there is. So what does that mean, the more peace there is? So you can understand that there's more peace for the person I'm giving the charity to, because now he has money, and he can buy flowers for his family, or whatever. He has buy food, right? So there's peace within the person, the poor person's household. I could also understand it, some commentators say, is that it creates peace between that person and God. So meaning when the person is poor, getting back to what Susan was saying before, when the person is poor, there could create some level of negative relationship with God, some sort of taina, why am I poor? And now that I'm giving him money, the person has a better relationship with God and realizes that things aren't as bad. The other way to read this is that tzedakah doesn't mean charity. Tzedakah just means doing something right or doing something nice. Some even expand it to mean any sort of mitzvah. Anything that I do that's a mitzvah oriented, especially for another person, will increase peace between people. So that's an expanded view of that. And then finally, the Mishnah ends with Kana Shem Tov. So if I acquire a good name for myself, that is for me. Now, this, I don't have a lot to say about this specifically, but it's something interesting to think about. So the other things were not for you, right? And what does it mean that this is for you? And what is that good that I want it to be for me? Right, so there's probably some deeper symbolism here. I don't know exactly what the answer to that would be, but the good name is mine. That goes with me, and that's inherent within me, and that's not for anybody else. Yeah.
I think because if you look at all the others, somehow there's another that you give to, as opposed to this. This is really just for yourself.
But Marba Torah, Marba Chaim is also for myself.
Yeah, but when you're learning, you've got to learn with someone else, and your learning Torah is obviously going to influence.
Good. Yeah, so there's some portion that read it that way, that it's a sort of like a icing cherry on the top. Okay, good. And then finally, kanalo divrei Torah, kanalo chayam olam haba. If you acquire for yourself divrei Torah, you will acquire for yourself the world to come. I'm just going to show you source number 8. We're not going to read through it because it's a little bit long. But this is from the Maharal. And for those of you here for the drasha yesterday, I referenced the Maharal, and I think this is a good example of similar things that we spoke about in the drasha. But what he basically does here is he pins, for somebody mentioned before, the 5 versus the 5. He basically says that there are the first 5 things are related to Dvarim Gashmiim, like I think you said it before, that they're related to physical things, and the second 5 things are related to spiritual things, and he pins those against each other and explains how they relate to different parts of the body. The first 5, the top 5 of us, relate to our brain and our eyes and our ears. Those are more spiritual aspects of ourselves. And then our feet and our legs and stuff below the belt is the more physical aspects of ourselves. And he explains how that all fits into the Mishnah. It's just going to take a little bit too much time to do now, but feel free to read it on your own. I think it adds a little bit to the discussion. So I think we finished this Mishnah, which is good. So we just finished the second parable. We'll take questions in a second. So again, next week we are going to, the goal is to review the second parak through the lens of the Abar Benel. So it's going to be new stuff in the sense of it's going to be a new mahalik. It's going to be a new approach, but it's going to be recapping the Mishnayos that we saw. I think it's a nice way of ending off the I don't know if every single mission he goes through. I have to go through it again. It's a long piece. I have to go through it again. But it's basically also it's a running theme within the Abar Benel. So I'm gonna have to put some work into it to make it clear. But it should be an interesting way of recapping. It's gonna be next week we're meeting. In 2 weeks we're not meeting. Yeah.
Rest and overcome by having to learn.
So what did he do?
He followed the doctor.
Followed the doctor's
advice. And
okay, that's the, you know, the guarantee. Yeah. Good. I mean, that's, I think that's the main big picture that we did in the first part of the Mishnah. We saw that that's the running theme. The running theme is that the things you think are going to give you pleasure give you short-term pleasure, and in the long term, not only do they not give you pleasure, they give you a headache, and you're giving a spiritual reason for that is because you're trying to feed the wrong thing, right? And the pleasure that we get long term is through feeding the nefesh, not feeding the... not being the goof. And then the first point that you made, I think, is also a nice recap point, is that this is subjective, and there are no specific rules. And for one person, marbe will be, you know, an extra piece of cake, and for another person, it's two pieces of cake. Whatever that answer is, the marbe depends, and I think we saw that in the Medrash Shmuel with the money. It really depends on the person's perspective, but at a certain point, it goes too far. I mean, at a certain point within your own knowledge and thought system, this now becomes unhealthy, and it's up to us to know, or it's up to us to put us in a situation that somebody can help us know that you've now, you know, you're going too far, and you got to take a step back and focus more on the things that increase as much Torah. No problem with learning as much Torah as you want. You want to go overboard with something? Go overboard with learning. That's not going to affect you negatively, except in extreme cases. Okay. All right. So we will see you, everybody, next week. Good Chodesh. Except on Tisha B'Av. That is true. We have Mizumin.
Yeah, we're going to have... Can I just ask, everybody here has access to the Kingsway bulletin, right? In case there is ever a change, just go to the bulletin and you find out in case there is a change... and a class would be suspended, or previously was going to be suspended, but now it's back. Just look at the bulletin.
Okay. Unless the bulletin's wrong, then don't
look at it. The bulletin's
never wrong.
And eventually, don't forget Yalla Biyabo today. But we're saying the Varech.
Sorry about last week. Schleimer, don't you have your way of the water? No, don't have a lot of Schleimer, man.